The Blue Collar Voices Show.
My first job I did on my own was, I believe, in 2006. It was a side job I did. That was my first one. I remember it. Broom finish.
How big a job was that?
It wasn't big. You know, you're just talking maybe a couple yards of concrete, just like a little small, like 10 by 15 or something. That's not very big.
Okay.
And then I got into my first stamp job in 2008. I believe it was. And that is a more of a higher end decorative. And once I got into that, that's when I was like, you know, I want to do this.
The answer to last week's trivia question is the Great Wall of China at 13,170.7 miles. This is according to the National Cultural Heritage Administration on June 5th, 2012. For clarity, only 9.4% of the wall remains, so I'd say it's debatable as to if it could really be considered one long wall or not.
Hey, Mavericks.
Yeah.
Hear about ice?
What's that?
You want another one?
Really?
Yeah.
I feel the need
for speed.
Welcome to another episode of the Blue Collar Voices Show. Today, I am delighted to have as our guest, Adam Drews. Adam runs Drews Concrete over in Goshen, Ohio. They specialize in flat concrete, such as patios, sidewalks, and driveways, but they also specialize in building shelters for both storms and, check this out, nuclear bombs. I ran across Adam via browsing reels on Facebook. He had an interesting reel, so I contacted him, and here we are. Welcome to the Blue Collar Voices Show, Adam.
Hey, how's it going? Good to be on the show.
Well, I'm glad to have you. So let's just go ahead and get started. Tell us, what is it you do on a day-to-day basis as your business?
Basically, I run a small business here in Goshen, Ohio. I do mostly flat work, concrete. I've got a crew of about three guys, plus me. And we just basically tackle custom, more on the custom line of concrete work. We try to tackle residential work that a lot of customers need some projects done on their property. They need retaining walls done, or if they need to have something replaced, or if they want like a real nice, pretty fancy stamped concrete or something, that's what we do.
When you say custom, do you tend to look for work that other people aren't inclined to do?
Basically, I try to look for work that some people, you know, typically would turn down because it's too complex, or they don't have the skill levels or knowledge of knowing how to be comfortable to do it. And also, we just do a lot of the basic stuff too. You know, everyone has their limitations, but I run into a lot of customers that seem to can't get people to qualify or even take on the task of certain projects because, you know, not size wise it's too big, just it's too complex. There's a lot involved in it, and most people try to go for the easier job versus something that requires more hands-on and takes longer to do in processes.
What is an example of something that would be complex?
For example, if somebody wants a patio, but also they want like a fire pit that's off to the side, not necessarily attached to the patio. It'll have sidewalks that go off into towards a different part of the yard and connect to another patio, which would be like a independent fire pit, and it would be concreted, and also there'd be a sidewalk from that going somewhere else. Or could be like we have retaining walls. Like that one that I think you saw the video on where I did a kind of a weird thing. It was a custom thing a customer wanted. It's not normally something you would do, but she wanted to flatten out her backyard. And she did not want her alley driveway no more. So we, you know, took down her retaining walls that she had that were going down into a basement garage.
Falling over.
Yeah, they were falling over. And she said she wanted just basically to build a box around her garage door to where she was going to have another contractor come out and brick up her basement wall or even just keep the garage door. She wasn't sure yet, but she was just going to put steps going down to her basement. And she had issues with drainage also. And we solved the drainage issues she had with her basement flooding because all that water would rush down that driveway and flood her basement. She had probably 5 or 6 guys she contacted, and I was the only one that actually gave her an estimate. The other ones didn't even want to give her an estimate for it. And usually it's because of something that somebody don't want to do, or it can be too complex for someone to take the risk for certain things.
It looked to me like that wall was pretty beefy that you built.
I mean, it's basically done. Yeah, that's just normal thickness, 8 inches. It's just like a basement wall and a foundation on a house. It's structurally pretty much the same. It's got rebar reinforcements and footings, standard strength like a basement wall.
And on that particular job, how long did it take to get it started and to get it completed?
Start to finish, I mean, you got spacings on your jobs because you got other things you got, like scheduling concrete, rain, days, whatever.
Sure.
We were only on that job for 3 days total. Complete was probably 10 days, but we were actually only physically on it for 3.
Not bad.
No. And a lot of it had to do with weather.
Did you wind up having dirt brought in?
Yes, we did. And that was one of the reasons why it can take a while. We had to let the wall cure before we can put pressure on it, for a couple weeks, give it some time to dry, and then we backfilled it and all that. So
that's what you're doing. How long have you been in business for yourself?
Been in business for myself since 2019. I went on my own. I've always done concrete basically since I was the age of 15 is when I started doing concrete. I worked for RW Construction for on and off for about 10 years, give or take. I worked for a few other companies here and there, but eventually I went on my own side jobs doing stuff like that and kind of learned that I was able to do things and that I was kind of running to a lot of customers that had trouble getting stuff done, projects that a lot of guys didn't want to tackle. I could never figure it out, so I started kind of just doing it here and there, and then next thing you know, I was like, I'm just going on my own. And I did, and everything's been going pretty well.
Oh, that's great. You're such a new company, even though you've been in business for a few years. Are you trying to, grow the company up? Or are you pretty copacetic where you're at? What are your goals with where you're trying to go?
I mean, I'm trying to grow it a little bit. Basically, I don't want to be too big. I don't want to be one of them big guys that have a big company that has multiple crews and stuff like that. That's really not where I'm trying to shoot for. I'm just a father of 3 girls, been married for 17 years now. I've got 3 beautiful girls and basically just want to provide for them.
Sure.
And I just like to keep it simple, keep it small, but yet not too small to where I can't get stuff done, but yet not too big to where it's overwhelming. Basically a 1 crew thing is what we have going on right now. Pretty much that's about the size I would like to stay. Not that I wouldn't grow into certain things, just don't want to get really overwhelmed with having multiple crews out there. It can become a pretty good headache.
Would you like to grow enough that you're not actually out there having to do the work, but you could be more managing the company?
Yeah, that's kind of like what I've been working on kind of thing, just managing a crew that I can grow into. But the problem is a lot of, with the labor, intensive labor that we do, it's hard to find men that are willing to work. You can pay them, good money, and some of them still just don't stick around because it's hard work. It's intensive. Some people just aren't cut out for it. So it takes a special breed to get out there and be able to take the stress, take the heat. In the concrete business, it's fast paced when it comes to pouring. We try not to, overwhelm our guys, but some guys can make it hard. You can have a crew of 7 or 8 guys that don't know what they're doing and have a big mess and make it hard. And it seemed like that day was just overwhelming. And you can have a crew with only two guys on it or three guys that know what they're doing and it make it look easy.
How do you motivate your guys? How do you motivate them to just get in and kill it?
Well, sometimes I try to make it to where, yeah, we have a short day or whatever, go home, but it usually doesn't end up that way. Some days it does, some days it doesn't. It just depends on what's going on. You got customers that you have try to meet certain standards when it comes to timing on your jobs, windows. I usually try to take care of my guys, go to dinners, whatever, buy them lunch. We take care of each other. Bonuses sometimes, it just depends. But mostly, I mean, there's other options to motivate somebody, but then sometimes it can bite you, you know, not really work out. In the past, I've seen other people do it. Get tips from other business owners what to do, what not to do, since I was a young business, and do's and don'ts. And I kind of understood where that was coming from, and I took their word for it and just kind of listened to them. So,
when you were working concrete, you said you kind of got started back about 10 years ago. What was, say, something that really just annoyed you a lot? Is your experiences back then, what was something that frustrated you?
When I first started?
Right. When you weren't working for yourself, when you were working for a company as an employee.
Oh, when I was working for a company, what frustrated me? I would say what frustrated me with working for somebody as an employee, working under another company, was that I've learned was, you know, when you had a talent and you were able to do stuff that a lot of other people weren't able to do, they took advantage of you sometimes. That happens, but I guess underpay maybe, or at least you felt like you weren't qualified, you were overqualified and underpaid.
Right.
That's one thing that was frustrating to me, but it's, as a business owner, you kind of learn and see where a lot of the people that you worked for in the past had reasons for what they did. You know, when it comes for overhead of a business, managing your money, things like that, making sure people have, you know, you got, you know, capital cushion for money in the future, things like that. And that's where a lot of times there's a balance to it, you know.
Right.
To basically limitations, you know, everybody has a limit that they can make. But I would say when I was younger, you know, obviously I was more cocky, more prideful, whatever. And I'd say, you know, that was the main thing that frustrated me. I'd bust my butt, knock something out. Sometimes it just didn't get what I thought I would out of it. You know what I mean? Financially.
Yeah.
But I was somebody that really just easygoing person. I'm passive. I'm not someone that's going to be like, you know, I do my job, take care of things. No complaints, try not to, and go home. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
I was a lot of times a guy that would actually sit there and do things that most guys would give in on. You know, hand shoveling gravel off of trucks, hand loading concrete.
You would make it happen, tenacity.
I'd make it happen, basically. And I just had a lot of energy. It's just being young, really. But the young guys I get in today, at the age I was there, was totally different. A lot of guys today that I work, they complain. I'm like, you don't even have any clue what we've been through, the generation, or even the guys that I worked, that my old boss, the stuff that we went through when I was younger, we would never do it today, you know, just because we're older. But we look back at the stuff we did, and we're just like, what were we thinking, you know? And hand doing a lot of work back then, it's just 17, 18 years ago. 21 years ago, you know, when I first started, it was 15-year-old gung-ho, ready to go to work. And I just basically worked part-time, whatever, and went to school. I was homeschooled, so I was able to stay home.
Sure.
Doing my schooling in the evenings, and I went to work and things like that. You know, we got pretty much. But my first job I did on my own was, I believe, in 2006. It was a side job I did. That was my first one. I remember it. Broom finish.
How big a job was that?
It wasn't big. You know, you're just talking maybe a couple yards of concrete, just like a little small, like 10 by 15 or something. That's not very big.
Okay.
And then I got into my first stamp job in 2008, I believe it was. And that is a more of a higher end decorative. And once I got into that, that's when I was like, you know, I want to do this because I like the task of it, getting something that just mud coming out of the truck and turning it into something that looks like creek rock
art.
And tile and stuff like that. Yeah. Art. It was pretty nice.
Today, before we got connected, I was just browsing your page again, and I saw that you recently posted some stuff that's got some dark decorative concrete work. Looks pretty good.
Thank you.
I know that you can tell sometimes that it's concrete, but sometimes you can't. I've seen some work that you're like, wow, this is concrete. I was curious, do they make stamps that has more of a variety of patterns? So rather than using one stamp over and over, you might have several stamps that would give you different patterns so you don't notice that it's a same stamp?
Yes, actually there is. I mean, you can have different patterns, like when they make the molds, for example, there's called seamless stamps. And basically a seamless stamp is where we just overlap a bunch of stamps together. They might be like a 4x4 or 3 foot by 3 foot. And we just overlap the edges, stamp it, and just turn the pattern a little bit. And some of the skins are identical to each other, but some of them are different. And if you alternate them as you're stamping, it kind of breaks up the pattern where you don't see it. There's not too much repetition in it.
That's cool.
But there is some stamps out there that are higher end, like tile-wise, that you would never be able to find the same pattern again. They're more costly. Not too many guys have those to work with just because of their cost.
Have you had anybody request anything like that or want something special that you have to make an extra effort?
Yeah, but once they find out how much it costs, they usually won't go for it. It's not practical. Some people, it's just not practical in their thinking. They think that maybe I can have a mold made. And there's actually some concrete companies out there just like me. When they got bigger over the years and they've had more money set aside and things like that, they actually got to where they were able to have custom stamps made that are specifically designed and built by them. They went out to a waterfall somewhere where it was a dry riverbed or something and casted their own little mold of a stone texture, and they actually use it for their stamps. And the only people to have them that they know of is themselves. You know what I mean?
That's very cool.
Not to say someone may not go down to the same creek and do the same thing, but usually they don't. But there's a few of them here in actually Cincinnati that have their own custom patterns that nobody has but them. And they had them molded, patented, whatever.
Well, it seems to me that it would be a very high-end client that would want that.
It is. I mean, you usually don't run into those every day like that. But, you know, most people that call, usually a lot of them are middle class to lower, you know, some of them are even lower class, believe it or not. Some people that have the extra money and they just want to have some nice concrete patio in their backyard. They don't have much money themselves. One thing they do have money to spend on this year, and they just want to have a little patio put on to enjoy.
Right, right.
But a lot of people, they just usually are middle class people, and they'd like to have something to enjoy in their backyard. Or I did a yard one time that was over in Westchester, Ohio. It's a pretty big project. Guy put like $100,000 in his backyard.
Mm.
Not just with me, but I'm just talking about between everything he had done with other contractors. You know, he had a pool put in, retaining walls we did up there, patios, but also he did some other stuff, all kinds of plumbing, all kinds of drainage in his yard, decks built. It was just a huge monster project. It looks really sharp. But we were on that project for quite a while, but we got it done.
How many people are like him? What is the market like in general in your area?
Yeah, economy in Cincinnati is pretty good when it comes to your average, basic, steady flow. Right now, it was before I was in business on my own, it was not as good as it is now, they say. That was up to like 2019, 20, and 21 were pretty good years. Where we are finally starting to see a little bit of the decline when it comes to, I don't do new construction, but a lot of the guys I do know that do new construction, there is slowing down of it. But also there's a cement shortage. There's different cement shortages in different parts of the country right now. Ours is not real, real bad. but basically they've cut people out that were not, if you're not a business owner of a concrete business, they pretty much are cutting you off of concrete for now. Like a homeowner that calls and says, hey, I'm doing a project in my backyard this weekend. You're not getting concrete right now at the moment. It has to be through a business, basically.
Right. And I heard that there was one of the mixing, one of the plants that create the concrete, there was a huge electric motor, just a gigantic electric motor that burned up, and they had to get it rebuilt.
I don't know if that was a local plant here. I mean, the plants, you know, plants have issues all the time, normal issues. It's just sometimes we'll get calls on our orders and be like, you know, we can't get your order in right this second. It's going to be 2 hours late because this is wrong, or there's issues with this, or the plant's down for the day. Whether they're being honest about it or not, I don't know. You know, we just take it and go.
And so that throws you behind.
It throws me behind, especially if they say, hey, we can't get to you now for another 10 days. You know, that's the thing that sucks about this business. The weather. Oh, we could talk about the weather with this business all day long.
It's either too hot or too cold or too wet or too dry.
Too hot, too cold, too wet or too dry. Yep. And you get a scheduled day because the plants, how they do it is, a lot of people don't, you know, can't deal with the stress of this kind of business. So basically you have the weather you're dealing with, and you're dealing with the concrete plant, and also you're dealing with the homeowner. So you're dealing with three things, trying to meet three different places and satisfy the homeowner. Basically, we have a job. Let's say we just, you know, we're taking on a job. We're getting ready to form it up. You call concrete, you go to put it on the board with the plant, and they tell you, hey, we're 13 days out, 14 days out, or 18 days out before we can bring you concrete. And normally, back in like 2019 or prior to that even, you know, normally 3 days, you'd get concrete, and sometimes the next day or 3 days, you'd get concrete. And the furthest it would be out would be 7 days at the most.
What is it that happened around 2019? Seems like something happened.
There's different rumors. The cement shortage started in 2019. We didn't have effects of it until this year here locally in Cincinnati. But supposedly it's a cement shortage or it's new regulations. From what I did the research myself, it has to do with new environmental regulations, uncontrolling, because concrete's the most used material in the world.
Mm-hmm. It is.
So they, you know, the government stepped in and basically says, hey, we want to take control and step in and control your, the EPA controlling more on this, regulate it more. And I guess it's either harder to produce it now, or they came up with a new type, or they're trying to switch over to a new type of cement. From what I'm hearing, there is a new type of cement they're using. It's called 1L or L1. And it basically is not the cement we were using 3 years ago. And it's supposed to be more environmental friendly to produce, but it may take longer to produce. I have no clue. But for some reason, we are having issues getting concrete within a decent time. It's not that we're completely not getting it. It's just in a decent manner, decent timing, it's not happening right now. And a lot of guys don't know why. You know, everyone has rumors about it, but the plants don't really give us too much information on it. So
if it's a new type of concrete, do you notice any differences in the curing time and the processing of it on your end?
Yes, we have actually been noticing some differences. I had a bad batch about a month ago. I had to tear out a job just because the batch was not curing properly. It was, you know, it just turned into gravel basically when I hit it with the jackhammer, just crumbled up. It just didn't have no strength to it. Just all kinds of things. But also, it has a longer curing time, it seems. Seems like when you're letting the concrete dry, normally everything would dry out pretty even within a week, to where the coloring is pretty even. Now I'm seeing to where jobs are spotty, like it's not curing out as fast in certain places as it would evenly. Not just me, but other guys. I just had a guy before I've actually got on this podcast that talked to me about it, asked me the same question, sent me a picture, and I said, yeah, I'm having the same issues. You know, I'm seeing spotty curing times on these jobs longer than what they used to be. Normally, a spotty cure usually is only for maybe a week or so. Now, jobs I'm seeing 3 weeks from now, and they're still spotting, like where it's still curing.
So is the source where you're getting your concrete from, have they given you any different information? Do they give you any specs, anything, any parameters to work with?
They didn't tell us nothing. They didn't even tell us that they switched cements until I confronted them. You know, basically, like, is there something going on differently? And then they explained, yeah, but you haven't, you know, they say you haven't complained about it too much in the past. I'm like, well, you know, they really haven't said much, which is kind of weird. You know, you normally would think you get a letter in the mail saying, hey, we switched the ingredients to this product instead of this product. Because, you know, different cements can set up differently. You can have stuff that's more flashier than others. Color-wise, it may be a whole different ballgame, you know, and you're used to seeing a different color and trying to tell a homeowner, describe to them what it is, you know. Because you get homeowners that say, well, I don't mind, you know, plain white concrete, but yet somebody may want a little bit darker gray concrete, so you have to add color. And if they don't tell you that they switch cements that dries whiter than the old stuff, then they should let you know, you know.
You have to orchestrate your time and when you're going to be able to work on jobs. But if you're expecting to go out 8 days later, but now it's got to be 12 days later, that could throw you in a lurch.
It does. I guess kind of basically you just got to, you know, when you're managing the company, you just got to think ahead. And normally we, for years, didn't think that far ahead. So it was it's been a little bit of adjustment. I'm actually still adjusting to it. Basically trying to get ahead of thinking of jobs, you know, getting them on the board with a plant, getting things on schedule to where when you do go to a job and you form it up, it's not basically having issues getting concrete quick. You're getting it within the same manner as you was prior to the cement shortage. And trying to work that out can be a headache because you got to, instead of dealing with two jobs or four jobs or five jobs at a time, you're dealing with 10 jobs at a time now, just to stay ahead like that. Planning it, trying to get the customers on board. Look, you know, explain to them the situation, and most of them are fine with it, and they understand. They'd rather it be that way for me to be a head start on it. That way things are going to be done within the manner of a week or so, instead of sitting trying to figure out how to get concrete for 2 weeks. And some of these plants are actually, if they find out that you're using other suppliers, competition, they give you a hard time. They may not even bring you concrete no more.
You got to be kidding me.
No, I've never had that issue, but I've heard it. I've heard it before, and it's kind of sad. When I heard that for the first time, I'm like, you're kidding me. I actually had a homeowner today that called me, and she has a job that's been formed up sitting for 2 months. Because a contractor cannot get concrete. It's not that he's just a new guy. This was his first year, and he doesn't have a name for himself. The plant is not familiar with him. So he was one of them guys that got kind of, I guess, pushed aside. I don't know. You know, the guy could be lying to her. You know, he could be having financial issues. Who knows? But she basically came in and said, hey, will you complete the job? Because you're saying you can get concrete at least within a couple weeks if you order it. I said, yes. She's like, this guy can't get none at all. It's been sitting for 2 months and we want to get our driveway finished. So, you know, there's a possibility I may have to go out and look at a job next week for that issue. And I don't like to really step in on someone else's job, but it happens quite a bit sometimes. I think last year I had 7 jobs that I had to finish that other contractors bailed out on. It's sad.
Those other contractors, were they going out of business or they just dropped the ball on that particular job and was doing other work?
A lot of times what happens is they don't mean bad by it. I mean, they, you know, they did do some work there, but basically what happens is they give a bid to somebody. Someone comes in there to do X amount of work and they said, this is going to cost you $3,500. And then I come in there and say, hey, I'm just talking about if this was the point where I first came in and gave an estimate.
Okay.
Somebody was $3,500. I came in there and said, I'm going to be $4,500. Somebody else came in there and said, I'm going to be, you know, $5,200. Okay, the homeowner's got three bids. Obviously, most of your homeowners go with the lowest one. So what happened was the guy that usually was in there for $3,500 got neck deep up into it and realized he underbid the job, and that happens a lot. And then they just usually end up just bailing out. Usually they just tell a homeowner they ran into issues, this or that. I'll get calls where sometimes they got it formed up. They were waiting to pour it, but they weren't going to do it. They wanted to get more money from the homeowner. And I usually tell the homeowners, I'll let the homeowner know if they underbidded it, because usually I'll ask them how much did the guy bid it before me. And they'll say he was this much and he'd be $2,000 cheaper than me. And I'm like, you can't even pay for your labor and your materials for that much. So he underbid it, period.
Right. And so in a situation like that, I can see it could kind of go either way. If it's formed up, it may not even be formed properly. You may have to tear it all out, basically start over.
I've had to do, I'd say out of the seven last year, five of them I had to form it. Actually, three of them I had to tear the concrete out. Because they poured part of it and it wasn't done. Like, it was horrible. You know what I mean? Just the finish wasn't right, nothing. And I usually try to avoid that. I'll tell the homeowner, look, it's concrete. It's solid. It ain't going nowhere, you know, but they just couldn't bear to look at it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So they said, we'll just pay you to tear it out. Cause I usually will try to tell somebody, look, I'm not after your money. I'm here to help you. If you can bear this concrete sitting here looking at it, I just leave it, because concrete's expensive. The labor's expensive. You know, it's something solid to drive on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And some homeowners say, no, I can't stand looking at it. The finish is horrible. It's just this. So I'll demo it out, take care of the issue, and just move on. But there was three of them that were like that last year I dealt with. One guy tried bag mixing, like a 3 yard pour. And 3 yards is a lot to bag mix. I don't even like to bag mix a half a yard of concrete. But this guy tried bag mixing a 3 yard pour, ended up making a big mess of it. It was only like an inch thick. But I bid the job, because when the homeowner had an issue with the customer, or like when the customer had an issue with the contractor, I said, I was here about 4 months ago and bid this job. He goes, yeah. He goes, this guy said he'd do it for this much. And I remembered, I told him I didn't know exact number, but I pulled my files out and I realized, okay, I do remember what I told you. And I think I was like $1,500 more than the other guy. And I said, well, I don't see how the guy was even going to touch it for that much. You know what I mean, the numbers that some of these homeowners get from people don't even make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So.
It sounds like some of these jobs, we're not talking major, large size jobs. So the $1,500 that you're just like talking about, that's a huge percentage. It's not like it's a job that's $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 where $1,500 could be hidden away somewhere.
In this line of work, it's easy to dig a hole, basically. The material costs, concrete is the way to put it compared to other types of construction. The labor is high, okay? Because you're dealing with a seasonal position. You're dealing with seasonal positioned employees or subcontractors, and you're dealing with also an inflation in material like we've never seen.
Correct.
So basically, when you're dealing with people that are familiar with certain prices from back in the day, they get themselves in a hole.
Okay.
They don't realize that, hey, we're living in a time where inflation's at the highest rate it's been ever since I can tell, you know, since I was a child. You know, you could see, you can go buy you used to be able to go down to the gas station and buy a 25 cent Debbie snack.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now you can't get a Debbie snack for less than $2.50. Well, inflation has happened, but these guys are stuck in like the 80s and 90s prices.
So they're just winging it.
They're just winging it. They're just going by, they'll Google how much to price something. They'll say, okay, well, I know exactly what they're doing.
So how do you bid a job?
From experience of dealing with jobs, knowing how long something takes. Some jobs I bid by the square foot. Some jobs I bid by the scope of the work. Like I'll start off with the square foot price, But then I go from there when it comes to the size. Is it too small? If it's too small, sometimes you have to pass it up just because you can't justify a certain amount of money with the size company you have, the crew you have, you know, with what they're going to have out of their own pocket. And some people don't care. They want it done right because they know you. They say you got a good reputation. We're still going to pay the money because we know it's going to get done and be done right. Then you have some people that you try to avoid that. And you try to give people good prices. Some of these guys that come out here that I've given estimates to, I hear all kinds of stories. Like I did bid a job where I bid it for, I think it was like $15,000. He had another quote from somebody that was $32,000. And it was nowhere near supposed to be $32,000. The guy just didn't want to do the job. And he was probably throwing a number at the homeowner where if I get it, I'm going to make a killing on it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Mine was right in the market pricing for the job. I think there was another guy that was around me too, but he was comfortable with me because of knowing what I was doing. He's seen a lot of my work. You know, he kept hearing my name. Whatever, he went with me. So,
do you have any kind of formulas or spreadsheet or anything that you use
for what
to do, like your bidding, your estimating?
I mean, I can usually walk on up on a job and just know how much about it's going to cost as soon as they talk, start describing. But you know, I still go over my numbers just to make sure things are, because I usually have a minimum. I usually don't want to go on a job for less than $3,600. And it could be a really small project and it's not be worth it to a homeowner to spend that kind of money. But when you got, you know, when you're dealing with concrete, minimum plant has a minimum, and that varies between contractor to contractor. But, you know, you got guys that have a minimum of $5,000. They won't come on a job site for less than $5,000. And those are usually a little bit bigger companies that are that way. I usually just do square footage. I take my square foot and I times it by whatever I charge per square foot for a broom finish. Then I have a square foot for machine finish. And then I have a square foot for stamped concrete, couple different prices, because there's a lot of different details in stamped concrete. So that can vary in prices. Anywhere from $18 a square foot, $16 a square foot, all the way up to $25 or $27 a square foot. It just depends.
So how do you, or do you even have to go out and look for business? Is it just rolling to you right now?
Right now, it just rolls in. It's not, I mean, years ago, people didn't, you know, a lot of advertisement was done. I've paid for advertisements here and there, mainly just to put my name out there, not really digging for work, just to kind of be repetitious in my name coming up. You know what I mean? People getting familiar with a local business. You know what I mean? That's all I did it for. And I ended up just kind of cutting it out because I'm like, it was just overwhelming. I was getting more phone calls than I could handle. I mean, I was already booked out 4, 5, 6 months and I was still getting 30, 40 calls a day. And I said, well, I can't handle that. So I was cutting that out. Like, it got overwhelming for a while. Now, without the, paying for the ads and everything, I'm getting a consistent flow of business just by word of mouth. My personal Facebook page is all I do in word of mouth. And I usually get 20 calls a week. And that's plenty for me, because out of those 20 calls, I'll fish a little bit, see what they are. And I'll probably take on 10 of them for estimates. I'll probably land 8 of them.
That's not a bad ratio at all.
No, I usually, out of every 10 jobs I go out and actually physically step foot within a homeowner's property and actually talk to them, out of 10, I'll usually land 8 of them. That's my average.
And I assume you're not trying to be the cheapest.
No, I try not to. I've had homeowners tell me that I'm the middle guy, or sometimes even on the higher end sometimes. Just depends. I mean, a lot of times a homeowner doesn't know what they're looking at neither on an estimate. Some of them think a number is a number, but they don't get the details of the other guy. If they say, yeah, you were the highest bid, okay, what was he going to do for that much money? Was he going to do the same thing I was going to do? Or, yeah, if I cut this out and this out and this out, I'll probably be the same as him. You know what I mean? So a lot of homeowners don't know to look at that. They don't know to look at the itemized of the bill, you know what I mean? Details of what he's going to do scope of work. Is he using rebar? Is he using fiber mesh? Is he using this, or is he not using fiber mesh? You know, I mean, there's just different things.
Well, let's take a little bit of a tangent and let's talk about nuclear bomb shelters. How did you get started in that?
Really? I don't build them right now. That was something I've been looking into, actually. And I actually been working with an architect up in Columbus. I have not officially have gotten everything done for it yet.
Okay.
It was just something I had on my webpage, really, honestly, and didn't really – haven't got into too much. But that's something I've been trying to offer to people.
What makes a nuclear bomb shelter different than just a regular storm shelter?
Okay, a storm shelter is different levels in the ground, different thickness walls, things like that. Like, I mean, technically a nuclear shelter would be a shelter that's filtered air from the radiation fallout during a nuclear fallout. Like a bomb shelter would possibly survive a nuclear bombing, but it would basically not be a direct impact. It would only be for a fallout. A nuclear shelter wouldn't be able to take a direct impact neither, usually. It's only a fallout shelter. So basically, you would have to be so deep in the ground to be able to survive the radiation, the heat, you know, however they say it, the details of the heat levels, the radiation poisoning, the proper filtration system, have enough filters to survive. Just depends on the fallout. Now, a storm shelter, it is able to be used, I guess, for like a minor like shelling, like what's going on over in Ukraine, for example.
Right.
I don't know if I'm allowed to mention that on the show. But
I don't care.
Anyways, how that's going on over there, they got local little isolated bombings dropping, and you know, you got the shellings going on. A storm shelter is a good way of surviving in those situations, technically. Over there, they've got all kinds of that stuff over there. Because America, you know, I did a research one time of all the nuclear things around the world, and also they call them like just fallout shelters or shelling shelters or whatever. And there's a lot of them in Europe, up there in Europe countries, United Kingdom, Romania, all kinds of places has thousands of bomb shelters that were built during World War I, World War II, and after, and some of them are still there. Like, they're actually able to be fully functioning without replacing, they wouldn't be without replacing, like, a lot of the plumbing, electrical work that you have to upgrade, but structurally, they're still sound. They're able to be used. So that's why I decided, I'm like, well, you know what? There's not too many guys out there offering concrete structural shelters for storm or for a fallout, whatever. I got online with an architect, talked to him a little bit on designing one that would have certain designs. I don't want to say too much because it's kind of like a patent thing.
That's fine.
It's pretty cool. He worked with me for a little bit on helping me design one, and ended up actually coming up with the design and everything. We're still in the process of meeting up and getting together and actually putting this thing in the ground, like a sample, basically go from there. I don't know how many customers would be for that. I mean, some people there, I mean, there's a lot of people that do it already, but most of them are like the plastic shelters. You can buy a little storm shelter or a fallout shelter for, you know, a few grand that you can buy through Lowe's, I think it's Lowe's or Tractor Supply.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of them box companies, you can actually buy a do-it-yourself little storm or shelling, nuclear bomb, whatever you want to call it, shelter, and you just dig a hole, bury it, and pour concrete around it if you wanted to, or put dirt around it. But they're small.
Mm-hmm.
They're very small. They're very tight. They're not really comfortable to be in.
Especially in the Midwest, a lot of people are just looking for a place to be safe during, say, a tornado.
Yeah, we actually had a tornado come right through my hometown here. Goshen, Ohio was, I don't know if you heard that on the news where you live, but we actually were under a state of emergency about a month ago. We had a tornado come through here and rip right through here.
No, I did not know.
Tore house roofs off and everything. Well, my house actually had a little bit of damage, mostly in my yard, not on my house, but the house across the street from me, the business, you know, roof, half of it's gone. There's a couple houses a block away from me that has no roofs. Completely had to tear their houses down because how damaged their home was. Our fire department took a direct hit. 15 foot of the police station's tower, you know, radio tower.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 100 feet tall. There's like 15 feet or 75 feet of it, I think they said, missing.
It sounds like some rough times.
Yeah.
So what would you say, you know, we have a lot of people are looking at the trades now in a different way. What would you say to the people that are looking to get into a trade as opposed to, say, college? How good do you think the trades are going to be going forwards? What is some perspective there you might have?
I think the trades are the way to go, in my opinion, when it comes to getting into manual labor or intensive labor work. A lot of people don't like to hear it, but honestly, there's always work to go out there. Like at my age, I'm 37 years old. There's not very many guys at my age doing this type of work. I was like one of the last ones of my age to kind of be in concrete. You get a lot of guys that are older that do concrete, and they actually are basically falling away from it because they're getting at their age. They just can't, you know, they're not able to do it no more, some of them are actually retiring, or they just figure they step away from it now. They enjoy it. They love doing it, but they just physically can't do it no more. They might go get a job working in a large company that may be doing a project management or something, or be a guy that goes around, does bids and estimates or talks to homeowners, whatever the case may be. Just someone that just has experience like I do in the field, it's always an option. But in the trades where we're in, I mean, even if it's not concrete, just bricklaying, mason, electricians, I mean, the work is out there. It's just people cannot, talk about how hard it is to find someone to work. You put ads out, nobody shows up, nobody calls, there's just nobody wants the job. I've actually put jobs out looking for subcontractors or even just employees, whatever, $25 an hour, $30 an hour. Nobody will respond to you. And if they do, it's usually someone that don't know what they're doing, and they don't realize that this is that type of pay is for somebody that is more experienced, that has some kind of skill levels. I've got 18-year-olds that are coming out of high school to, you know, somewhere 18 to 22 years old. I will get one or two occasionally here and there, and they'll come to me and say, yeah, I want to work, but I want $30 an hour. And I'm like, yeesh. And in Ohio, that's not really, that's way above pay grade for that, you know, on that type of, you know, entry level. So.
But it does get back to supply and demand. And if you can't get anybody and the only people that show up demand that, then you have to decide whether you're going to hire them or you're just going to not do the work.
Pretty much. I mean, it's happened. I mean, I've paid guys over what they're really worth to me to get the job done and to continue on.
Right.
And hey, some of them guys, actually, I had one guy that stuck around for a while and it turned out to be a real good guy. Learned real fast and everything, but he had to move, whatever. Whole different story, but, you know, it's possible. I'm willing to take care of somebody. If they're willing to scratch my back, I'll scratch yours, you know, kind of thing.
Sure, sure. What kind of hobbies or passions do you have outside of being a business mogul?
I like to fish. I love to fish. I like to go out and fish in the ocean. I mean, I like to do a lot of freshwater fishing too, but I like to fish in the ocean. A little hobby of mine, I haven't done it for a while, but I like to build boats, little plywood boats that I actually enjoy doing in the garage for myself, really, and just kind of something I do. My dad was a woodworker.
Like a John boat?
Yeah, like a John boat or a skiff, you know, just like a little flat-bottomed boat. And I put motors on them and stuff. We go cruising around the lakes with them. And it's pretty fun, actually. I enjoy doing it. And haven't done it for probably 3 years, but It's something I enjoy doing. I enjoy going to places, sightseeing. I enjoy going to places like going down to Kentucky and stuff like that, or up in places where you can kind of go hiking and stuff like that with the kids and wife.
Well, that is cool. It's good to have hobbies and things, and I've never built a boat, but that sounds fun, I have to admit.
It's fun. You should try it sometime.
Yeah. Well, you told me you're 36. Well, as you look forwards for your life, do you kind of see concrete being what you're doing for the rest of your career?
Pretty much. My goal is to basically develop a company that I can manage and basically find, get guys as I'm still young in the business. So basically once my name gets out there more and more, maybe get the right guys that kind of work for me that I can more manage than I do. I do a lot of work myself,
Sure.
But as I've gone over the years, I've actually have stepped away a little bit more and more and more and allowed my guys to kind of do things. And I'm just very close management with it, to where I step in if I have to. And I do step in a lot, actually, still. If everything goes well, I do see myself as doing this for the rest of my life, pretty much. And I enjoy it. I have no problem doing that. I enjoy talking to customers. I enjoy meeting people,
Right. Absolutely.
And I like to step back and look at what I did. And, my guys do too. They take pride in their work. They like to step back when they see how hard it was to do.
Mm-hmm.
They'll say that when they step back and look at it, they were, they can say, wow, I did that,
Sure. Worked in construction myself, and you get something built and, years later you can drive by. Yeah. I built that.
Yeah. Yep. I've got plenty of them.
Oh yeah. Way more than I do. Adam, I just wanted to talk to you, and I'm glad I did. And is there anything else that you'd like to say before we wrap this up?
Now, unless you have any more questions for me or have something else you want to talk about.
Well, if you can think of something, we can talk about it. But the focus here is just, I'd just like to talk to blue collar people that have, stepped out there, they're making a difference, and, you've stepped out and you're working for yourself. That's a step that a lot of people don't take, and you're succeeding, you're growing. And my kudos to you for that.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, on that note, I guess we'll go ahead and wrap it up. So everybody, this has been Adam Drews. Adam, thank you very much for being on the show.
Glad to be here. No problem.
And I will talk to you later, sir.
Thank you.
Today's trivia question is, what are the real dimensions of a modern 2x4? Our guest on the next episode of the Blue Collar Voices show is John Van Bruggen. He's the owner of Clydesdale Frames, and what they build are timber frames. Here's a brief snippet from the upcoming show.
Now, when a piece kicks, it's going to come back and hit you right in the mouth. And so I'm sliding it through with my right hand. And so I just try to put some weight, down on that piece so it wouldn't kick and hit me in the face. And it kicks. I'm not even sure what happens because it happens in a blink of an eye, but my hand rolls through that blade.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of the Blue Collar Voices show. On this episode's page on bluecollarvoices.com, you will find show notes and any relevant links. If you are not subscribed to get notifications of new show episodes, you can do that at bluecollarvoices.com as well. Hey, let me know what you think. I'd love to hear from you. See you next time.
I'll be back.